The Monologue.
There are plenty of primary races underway. Results are starting to come in. We can tell you that Congressman Ted Budd, the Republican from North Carolina, is advancing to the general in the Senate race. He was a Trump-backed candidate taking on a former congressman, but he is going to advance to take on the Democrat. This is to replace the retiring Senator Richard Burr, who is a Republican. It seems very unlikely that North Carolina will see a Democrat take over that position. So this goes into the camp of Donald Trump endorsement that ends up seeing a victory. And there's a little bit of an unfair and frankly unrealistic narrative that's taking shape by some folks in the media. It's of interest, but I don't think it's that big of a deal, whether or not Trump-backed candidates advance. And I think overall it kind of depends on the area and it kind of depends on the candidate. The best candidate for the state or for the county will generally win in races where it's exceptionally close. Yeah, a Trump endorsement can help. The same way any endorsement of someone who's popular within the voting base who's taking to the polls will have an impact. I don't know if he's going to always pick the right ones. We know certainly he has not had a 100% victory here. I think generally he's done very, very well. Obviously, the polls suggest that. I haven't seen the finalized number of all of his picks going in to win the primary, but they're very, very, very good as of right now. They're certainly better than Joe Biden. Now, a lot of eyes are on the state of Pennsylvania because this could be a significant pickup for the Republicans. And it pits Dave McCormick and Kathy Barnett and Mehmet Oz. Now, Dr. Oz has been a little bit of a controversial figure because his past statements when he wasn't a politician have given some people the impression that he's not really a Republican. And some folks will point to the fact that even just recently, he wouldn't tell you whether or not he thought the last presidential election was stolen, as if that's somehow a question that you have to answer in the affirmative in order to be considered a Republican.
I want to be careful. Republicans are about fixing things. I know okay. For sure we've got to deal with 2020. But this is about knowing exactly what the diagnosis is so we can give it the right treatment.
So he clearly punted there, and he was right to punt. Now, Dr. Oz is the Trump-backed candidate, but there has been this last-minute surge, it would appear, towards Kathy Barnett, who is a fringe Republican, who a lot of the hardcore Trump supporters apparently think would be the best pick for Senate going into the general. They're wrong. She's not. She is very, very extreme, and she puts Pennsylvania at risk of not going to the Republicans. Mehmet Oz or Dave McCormick, I think, can actually deliver for the Republicans. Now, it's way too early to know. We've only got about a little over a percent of the votes coming in, and McCormick is in the lead with Mehmet Oz, number two, but it's useless at this point. Now, another place that we're looking, and this is going to be kind of interesting, is in Oregon, where you've got Kurt Schrader, who's in Oregon 5th, I believe. He is a Democrat, but he's more moderate. He's more moderate of a Democrat. But he's in a district that just got redrawn. And so it's just a little bit more conservative. And right now he's getting significant push from a progressive by the name of McLeod Schrader, I think her name is. She is out there, not Schrader, McLeod something. But she's a hardcore progressive. And this is actually good news for Republicans. Because if a progressive is able to defeat the incumbent and move forward into the general, that means this is now a potential pickup for Republicans in what used to be a very safe district in Washington's 5th for the Democrats. They redrew it to the point where it picked up a lot of, I think it's just fully now Bend, Oregon, as well as some of the other aspects that were the other cities that were already in Washington's 5th. So we're paying close attention to that. We're looking at the governor's race as well. You've got a moderate in Tobias Reed, who's the current state treasurer. He's a former state representative. He's taking, and moderate, I mean moderate Democrat. And by Oregon standards, he's a moderate Democrat. You put him in a red state, he is very much a liberal. But by Oregon standards, he's definitely a moderate Democrat. He's taking on Kotek, who is the, I think, Kim Kotek, former House Speaker in the State House in Oregon. This is someone who, Tina Kotek, sorry. She's someone who's very, very far to the left, very far to the left. And she's also one of those people who's very power hungry, and she goes about her business in ways that have actually ticked off a lot of folks in her own party. So the question will become whether or not Oregon, in these results, just again, these are primaries, will they start to lean into the moderate voices, or will they continue to lean into the crazy? I was on Newsmax, and I gave my analysis here. It's available right now at facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. And, you know, I made the point, Oregon staying very far to the left, that's not news. You expect that. You expect that Kotek will win. You expect that Joanne Hardesty from Portland, city council member, you expect that she will win. But if something happens where some of the more moderates pick up steam, or you see a significant chunk of Republicans picking up steam, that is a bellwether. That is a bellwether result or a bellwether campaign. Right now, you look at the numbers, and things could change, obviously, by the end of the day, because Oregon is a mail-in state. But voter turnout is very low, very low. It might be the lowest they've seen in history in Oregon. And if that's true, that's also an important point. It's an important point because, to be clear, understand that in Oregon, filled with progressives, if they're not enthusiastic right now, you can generally believe that in other places, especially the red or the purple states, they're also not going to be all that enthusiastic. Who does that help? It helps Republicans, because Republicans are very enthusiastic. There's a new poll out, again, from MSNBC, and they're looking at how people are feeling about the direction of this country. And that's usually a good sign as to which party is going to bode well during the midterms. Chuck Todd said this.
Where are we right now with the new NBC News poll? The wrong track, sitting at 75%. This is obviously in shellacking territory.
Obviously in shellacking territory. A reference, of course, to Barack Obama, who after his first 2 years in office saw a major shellacking. It was bad. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in Idaho, because they've got a gubernatorial race, one pitting a Republican, a conservative in Brad Little, versus their Trump-backed, and I think that this was a huge mistake for him, lieutenant governor in Janice McGinn. Now, she is an extremist. She just posted a video for Nick Fuentes at one of his events. Nick Fuentes is a white nationalist. And she doubled down, saying, oh, you got to get in front of all perspectives. No, you don't. No, you don't. She's a crazy. And she gives the opportunity to the national left-wing media to paint all Republicans as extremists. So I hope that she does not win in Idaho. I hope that they go with Brad Little, who is very, very conservative. This is someone who's trying to lessen abortions. He got rid of a lot of the regulations that were put in place, including, by the way, mitigation policies around COVID. He's been trying to cut taxes as best as he can. So I certainly hope it goes with Brad Little. But we'll end up seeing where things go. This is going to be really interesting. Another race that folks are paying attention to is in, who's our friend? Madison Cawthorn. He's not really our friend because he blew me off over at CPAC, the first one when he was supposed to do an interview. He's been just getting inundated with attack ads. Inundated with attack ads. So will he be able to hold on to his seat? He's getting challenged, obviously, from two other Republicans who would love to take that seat. We don't have any of the results in at this point yet that would give us any sense as to where things are headed. But that's where we're paying attention. We're going to have an update at the top of the hour with Fox News. But first, this.
The interview.
It can't be an even remotely interesting evening when you have to deal with the possibility that a man is going to drive off in your car with your kids in the back seat. It's something that happened to Kendra out in Moses Lake, where police spotted the suspect, Salvador Haguindagay. He had 5 warrants out for violent felonies. They pursued him with the intent of arrest. He has a history, according to police, of trying to just drive away when they try to make contact. So the moment that he gets into Kendra's car, you can imagine the panic from the police. Now let's talk about the panic coming from Kendra herself, who joins me on the line. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So police were chasing this guy. He was caught on body cam as well as dash cam. I actually did a segment on Fox News last week about this. Take us through what happened.
Well, he just ran down the hill and was asking for help, screaming for help. I stepped away from my car, and it was obviously the wrong thing to do and the right opportunity for him. So he jumped in and I fought with him, and it was probably 30 seconds. And then that 30 seconds, the officers were already right at my car and pulling me away so that I could, you know, get to my kids. As a parent, that's the first thing I thought about was my children.
Oh, I bet. Now, when he was yelling for help, at what point did you realize he was allegedly trying to carjack your vehicle?
When he took me and threw me to the side.
So he literally just assaults you?
Essentially, yes.
He gets into the car. At that point, I'm assuming the mom instincts really kick in.
Yeah. At that point, I think I just don't even remember thinking anything through. I just knew there was somebody getting in my car and my children were in there. And so I just chose to continue to try to fight to get the car turned off because he kept trying to drive away in my car. However, my car has push button for the gear shift. And so he didn't get very far.
Yeah. So we got a little lucky from technology there that he wasn't able to actually utilize it. So the cops show up as you're struggling with the guy. It looks like you immediately know cops are there, which frees you up to help with your kids.
The officer is the one who kind of released my hands and like kind of pushed me out of the car. So he could be the one to involve himself with the suspect. So, and then that moment I just flipped around and opened the car and got my son out and ran around the other side and grabbed my daughter out of the back.
So how old are your kids?
The two are 5 months and 2 years.
So a 5-month-old and a 2-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
How I imagine the 5-month-old maybe doesn't know what's going on, but what did the 2-year-old think or say at this moment?
She didn't say anything, actually. She was pretty quiet. I think when we got out of the car and got her out of the car, the first thing she said was, "Oh, look, Wii U's. That's what she calls police cars and fire trucks. But she was a little bit hesitant and still does not like to be like left in the vehicle. So we're a few weeks out from that situation. And so I don't tend to leave my kids very far from my sight anyways, but, she doesn't like to be left in a vehicle alone. Even if we're in the driveway, buckle her in, you need to get in. Mm-hmm. And she's pretty immediate with that.
Now, so from the body cam footage, and again, if you guys want to see it, it's up at ktth.com or youtube.com/Jason Rantz. Just check out the Jesse Waters primetime hit that I did. It looked like just passersby helped out, just random people.
There to pick up our... Yeah, I do. It's pickup. So we were all there to pick up our kids. So I have a third child that's in preschool. So we were there to get our children. And this was a friend of mine who actually drove in seeing what was going on and came up onto the situation and helped me right away with grabbing my son from the with the car seat.
Well,
so,
that's a good friend.
Yeah. But I mean, there were a lot of people there. So there's many witnesses. Mm-hmm. However, I don't think anyone in that 30 seconds knew what was going on and the situation going on. So, as a parent, I hope that every parent would do what I do, but I can't guarantee that.
Well, my assumption is that they would to a point, right? I mean, I have to imagine there was a little bit of a shock as to what was going on. I mean, if he was able to operate the vehicle, this could have ended a little bit differently.
Absolutely. That's been a thought in my head every moment. honestly, I don't think that I would have reacted any differently knowing officers were on site or not. Mm-hmm. I probably would have fought a little more had I not known there was an officer right there. But I don't think he would have gotten very far. And I have been told by even the moms that were there that they don't think that they would have maybe done the same thing. There's the parents that will react, and then there's some that can will just stop and freeze. And so I want to make sure every person knows that you don't have to stop and freeze. Just react, because sometimes that's literally the scariest thing to that suspect, is that you are reacting.
Sure. Yeah, and obviously context matters, because that was not necessarily safe for you in the moment. You probably weren't thinking of that. You were thinking of just, how do I protect my kids? But, I mean, this guy could have had a weapon.
He did have a weapon.
But to use against you is what I mean. I mean, he could have very easily used a weapon against you if he wanted to. But he...
Absolutely.
I mean, my takeaway, at least, from watching the video is that he probably didn't know you had kids in the back of the vehicle, and not that that matters, but he was so reckless and just trying to get out of there that he just went for the first car maybe he could find.
Most likely. I don't really know. I mean, I would assume you would know he's from the area, so you would assume that when you're parked outside of a school, you would know there's probably children there. But I can't say for what his...
Yeah. Well, sometimes degenerates are not necessarily intelligent. They're sometimes just bad people. You know what I mean? How are you doing with all of this now? I mean, it's been a few weeks since this occurred. How do you feel?
Honestly, I don't think it's actually really hit me. I'm sure there'll be something that triggers it later on. But I think mostly it was my kids were safe and my car was mostly not damaged. And so in that retrospect, I think I'm just thankful for that, and that's really all I focused on.
Yeah. How did the police interact? Like, what was that like after they made the arrest?
They were really nice, actually. I talked to a couple of different guys, and they were right there. The officers were really kind, and, you know, making sure I was okay and my kids were okay, and the person that helped me was okay, and, like, you know, they were... I had to go make a statement later that evening, and some photos the next day, and they were all very just like, we are so sorry, and I'm so glad we were able to, you know, make it the outcome that we did. You know, please know you have our support. Sure. Just very, very helpful and very polite.
Just, it's insanely dramatic video that is got to be one of the worst nightmares for any parent. It's available right now at youtube.com/JasonRants. Just check out the Jesse Waters primetime segment I did last week. It should be the second video listed. youtube.com/JasonRants, or text the keyword rants, RANTZ, to 1-800-465-8770. Kendra, thank you so much for stopping by and telling us your story. It sounds, at least, that the kids are not as traumatized as you might end up being from witnessing this. So that's always, you know, a positive, I guess, in what is otherwise just a pretty crummy story.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Again, you can text the keyword rants, RANTZ, to 1-800-465-8770. Just click on the YouTube link and check out the very dramatic video. And kudos to Kendra for doing what a passionate mom does best, which is fight for her kids. And in this case, it had a positive outcome. You're listening to The Jason Rants Show. Now this.
The Jason Rants Show.
Jason Rants has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form. Presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
The economy is not going well. We've got a baby formula crisis. We've, in fact, got a whole bunch of crises that the Biden administration refuses to take any responsibility for. Joining me on the line is Congressman Matt Rosendale, Republican from Montana. Welcome back to, or welcome to the show. It's your first appearance. We appreciate it.
It's my first, appearance. Great to be with you, Jason.
So we've got all these problems happening at once, and it seems like the game plan coming from the Biden administration is to, A, pretend it doesn't exist, B, continue to pretend it doesn't exist, and then C, eventually say, okay, it exists, but it's not our fault. Here's why. Is this a winning strategy going into the midterms?
I don't. You know, the only thing that I heard come out of this administration's mouth that makes any kind of sense at all is to say that it's Putin's fault, because I think Putin must have provided President Biden with a checklist and said, now, look, if you do all these things and really screw everything up, that Trump had done, then, you know, then we'll be in better shape with you. You couldn't create a list, whether you're talking about energy dominance, whether you're talking about the trade agreements, the inflation, the unemployment. I mean, you pick the chart, and this administration is really messing it up.
What would you recommend the administration do outside of taking responsibility, because we know that's not going to happen, on just economic growth?
I think they need to stop listening to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and literally listen to the Republican leadership and say, we have got to stop the spending. Every economist that has been out there talking for the last year and a half has said to continue spending, creating programs, pushing money into the economy when you don't have the products to buy is going to increase the inflation. We have got to reduce spending. Montana is very fortunate in it that we have an unemployment rate of under 3%, mm-hmm. Jason. I've got a Republican legislature, and I have a very good Republican governor, and so we're fortunate. But that being said, everybody has these labor issues, and they're trying to deal with. They've got the supply chain issues that they're trying to deal with, and this administration needs to get out of the way. They need to stop spending, and they need to allow the marketplace to return to normal.
Well, and, you know, it's hard to get the marketplace to return to normal when for the longest time, the Biden administration was basically paying people a premium not to go back to work. And I think that's created this imbalance where a lot of folks aren't, in fact, returning back to work unless they get, you know, a salary that is well outside of what a lot of the businesses can actually afford at this point because of the fact that they left and they made the economy worse.
They did. And, you know, anecdotally, I haven't had any economists back me up on this one, but I know in Montana that we have an aging demographic, and we have that across the nation as well. And there was a lot of people that when they went into the pandemic and they started receiving all this additional supplemental income, they said, you know, I know it's 3 years early, 4 years early, but I think I'm just going to go ahead and check out right now. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to take retirement now, not mm-hmm. begin accepting any of my pensions or my retirement income, and I'm going to coast along on everything that the administration has provided us. And so when you lose that segment of the workforce out, we have not been able to replace it with the pipeline, you know, backing them up with younger people yet. First of all, some of them just don't have the job skills. And second of all, a lot of them just are still living off of those same unearned income mm-hmm. that they had decided to hang around the house for a while longer.
Congressman Matt Rosendale, joining me on the line, Republican from Montana. At the same time, what's playing a huge role, and I know you pay close attention to this, is the rise of gas prices. At the same time, you had the Strategic Petroleum Reserve release a whole bunch of gasoline to try to help quell some of the problems. It did absolutely nothing except deplete our stockpile to a dangerous low.
That, you know, And we haven't heard much out of that over the last couple of weeks, as you've seen, Jason. The president tapped into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to the tune of 1 million barrels a day. That really could be very easily replaced if he allowed us to go back to our full production. And when I say allow it, full production when he took office was about 13 million barrels a day. Domestic production. We're down to about 11 million barrels a day right now. So that 1 million doesn't even make up for the production that he caused us to lose. The court's order that he opened up the leasing of the federal lands again, that was stopped mm-hmm. When he took office, along with rescinding the permit on the Keystone XL pipeline. But the leasing of those federal grounds, the court's order that he opened it back up, it put out for a bid, and then last week he withdrew those properties again. All oil wells have a diminishing rate of return. They don't produce forever. So you have to continually expand into these new areas. Well, when you open up a lease, Jason, you don't start production in a month or 6 months. I mean, sometimes it takes years to get that back up to production. And so they're slow walking permits and they've ceased leasing. So not only are we experiencing these extremely high energy prices right now, which I just looked on the financials, oil's at $113 a barrel right now as we speak, but it's going to be projected out into next year because we're not picking up the production today that we need to replace it. So that's a major problem. And when you're looking at a rural state, a large rural state like Montana, everything is freight into and out of the state. Our agricultural producers are now looking at, even without the highway tax, you're still looking at $5 a gallon for diesel to run your tractor or to get a semi up the road. This is a major expense. So not only are we seeing these bad prices now, Jason, but I will tell you, in the fall when it comes time for harvest and we're looking at around for the food supplies, we're going to have problems then too, and it's going to be worse.
Yeah, no doubt. And I don't necessarily look to Montana as far as the sort of the state of the election season going in. We know that Montana is solidly red. But a lot of what happens on the ground, especially in a state like Montana, does speak to rural America. What is the mood on the ground in Montana? I know you're being challenged by some libertarians, but it feels like Democrats have all but given up on you guys. Is that the general sense of folks that, you know, Democrats just don't seem to care about rural America, regardless of it's Montana or anywhere else?
While the Democrats in Washington, D.C. do not care about the people that live in the flyover states, and I really don't believe that they do, I will tell you the Democrats on the ground are not going away quietly. I mean, the Democrats in Montana mounted a field of 10 different opponents against me across four separate political parties. They are not going away quietly, and they will do everything that they possibly can to maintain control, to execute this Marxist agenda that they're trying to impose on our country. They want to destroy the family. They want to destroy our churches. And they want to keep control over the educational systems to brainwash our children. And those three elements are what they're focused on.
It seems clear that it's not working according to the polls, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you look at the polls across the majority of topics. Democrats are just trailing. What is the level of concern you have with the release of the Roe v. Wade decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, I should say? What do you think that's going to do to this election come midterms?
I think that that's going to put a lot more money into the Democrat war chest. That you see it right now. It's playing out. They're using that as a huge, huge fundraising tool. That's all they're trying to do. While I don't know if leaking that information out from the court was a crime, I can tell you that trying to intimidate the justices to influence their decision, that is a crime.
Yeah.
That's a federal crime. So if someone wants to protest and they can go out here on the mall grounds in Washington and get their permit or the town square and any town USA, and they get their permit to protest, they're able to do that. That's our First Amendment right. But when you start trying to protest to intimidate the justices, that's a crime. And so I think what you're going to see is a lot of money flow into the Democrat war chest. I think they're going to use that money to distort the argument instead of saying what really has happened, and that is, if, in fact, the Dobbs decision comes out the way that we are hoping, then it doesn't eliminate abortion in this country, unfortunately. But what it will do is transfer those decisions down to the states so that each state can start making decisions about exactly how abortion will be handled.
Just very quickly, on a state level in Montana, any concern that it would not go towards, not an outright ban per se, but severely restricting abortion?
I think that we've been moving that way for the last 20 years. The legislature has proposed several pieces of legislation to reduce the number of abortions that take place and to ensure This is another really, really important component here, Jason, to ensure the health of the mother, too, because there's a lot of situations where abortions are being allowed, whether it's through day after drugs, abortifacients that you can induce chemically, that the different places are trying to allow through the mail. And then you've got a woman who has no supervision whatsoever should she have a medical emergency. So there's also legislation to make sure that the mother's health is protected as well. And then to just eliminate the extreme measures of abortions after 15 weeks or the care of a child after it has been born, where states – radical states like New York and California are trying to claim that as an abortion when you've got a child on the gurney alive and trying to make a determination whether it's going to get medical assistance or not.
That's just flat-out murder. Like, I intellectually understand why someone could support abortion up until 15 weeks. Like, I disagree with that, but I understand it. There's no even attempting to understand a post-birth abortion. That is not an abortion. That's murder. It's ludicrous. We've been talking with Congressman Matt Rosendale, Republican from Montana. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Great to have you on, or be on with you today, Jason.
Thank you. Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The Quick Hit.
I want to bring your attention back to an exclusive story that we have online at KTTH.com in case you missed it in the first hour, because I do think that it is an important one. It's made more important by the victim in this story, even though he didn't want to be seen as a victim. A King County Superior Court judge ended up getting assaulted by a guy who apparently was well known to police officers in the area. He was going, this judge, to the courthouse. His name is Michael Scott. And this man, according to police, apparently just randomly punching some random person, goes up to this judge and slaps him in the face and pushes him. And the judge did nothing, didn't report this to 911, if not for a security guard who just happened to be looking at the surveillance footage at the time. We wouldn't even know about this. So the security guard ends up calling the police. The judge did not want to cooperate. We got to the point where the King County Executive's office got involved, where the deputy executive spoke, I guess, to the judge, or at least to his office, telling him to cooperate, I guess, or encouraging him to come forward and report this. And then finally it got reported, it would appear. The reason why this is such an important story is that this is a judge who, for whatever reason, didn't want to cooperate. But the consequences of not cooperating, he should know, which is that that guy stays out on the streets, that the police don't make an arrest of someone who very clearly is dangerous. Now, I know, as we said in the first hour, that the suspect might have been dealing with some sort of mental illness, and okay, and be that as it may, he's still a threat. And it feels like, to me, we should maybe encourage judges who are victims of crimes to come forward so that we can get these bad guys off the streets. Now, why did he not call the police? I don't know. Why did he not want to cooperate? There could be many answers to that question. Many. I honestly don't know. We speculated a bit about some of the possibilities. Maybe I got to one of them. His office isn't responding to comments, just the response was no comment. Okay. But there are implications when you guys don't report crimes. And I think that that is an important note to underscore. And I understand why some folks don't want to report a crime when it occurs, depending on the crime, right? You have a break-in to your home. Nothing was stolen. It was probably just some homeless guy who was rummaging through your garage. He's not there anymore. And no harm, no foul. Because, look, you call 911, especially if you live in Seattle, you know that it's going to take a long, long, long time for them to show up, the officers, if they are able to at all.
we oftentimes think about these incidents in terms of cars. You get someone breaks into your car, steals, you know, your CDs if you got them, or whatever it is in your car, your sunglasses, a backpack. And a lot of people just don't bother to report them because they believe that it's not going to be taken seriously, or there's no good that will come of that. Because especially, again, especially in Seattle, the city just doesn't care. But every single time that people choose not to make these kinds of reports for crimes, all you're doing is making it easier for Seattle politicians, or any politician, depending on where you live, to ignore the actual problem, because then they're going to have data that's not all inclusive of the reality. Your crime could have increased a percentage on some sheet somewhere that does make it a little bit more difficult for a politician or an appointed figure or whomever to ignore the reality. If we had today, just as a random example, today, let's just say we had 10,000 car break-ins, 10,000. That would obviously be a huge story. If no one reported it, it wouldn't be a story at all. We wouldn't know about it. We wouldn't have that data. We wouldn't be able to track whether or not different things that are being put out there by the city, different strategies by the city on a city level or a county level or a state level, whatever it happens to be, we won't be able to track whether or not something is happening and getting better or getting worse, because we're not looking at true data. So again, I implore people, if you are the victim of any kind of crime, don't think that it doesn't matter for you to put it out there, report it to the police. You don't have to report it to 911. You can call their non-emergency number for whichever city you happen to be in, whichever department that's covering you. You can do it that way. At least get it down on paper somewhere, or for them to put it down on paper, because it does provide a really important tool for us to figure out what's happening, why it's happening, where it's happening, and whether or not different strategies being imposed are making a difference. In the meantime, now obviously I don't want you to be a victim of a crime, so in the meantime, I would rather you just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to my blog where you can read this story. Text RANTZ to the number 1-800-465-8770, or just go directly to KTTH.com. Please read the story. Share the story on your Facebook wall, your Twitter feed, your LinkedIn, wherever it is. Let's get some eyes on this.
The Last RANTZ.
And with that, sort of on a related note of sort of action with intent, it's a good reminder, I think, to question everything. Because when you question things, you start asking more than just the why. So, for example, in that last story, I questioned, why didn't the judge report it? That's so odd to me. Why wouldn't he? He knows the process. He knows it makes it easier for police to be able to arrest when you have an actual victim. Why didn't he do it? And then I started to think about the whys. And then I started to think about the implications of not doing it. So then I thought, well, what is a result that will come of not calling the police? So that why question turned into a what question, and then a how question. And then you start getting more answers. And I think that if we did more of this kind of questioning on the important issues that are in front of us, or the important issues that politicians face, and they obviously take certain positions, why did they do that? Why are we spending even more money in Ukraine? Why is it that all eyes are on the Pennsylvania Senate race, as we just talked about? And then that begets more questions. And I think that ultimately, when we turn that kind of thinking towards news stories and politicians, I think, number one, we become more informed. But number two, we become more engaged. And more civic engagement is definitely a way to take this community that we live in, the city or county or state that we live in, we can take it back. With more civic engagement and simply asking questions, I think, gets us there. And that's the last rant. Although it was a last rant that was presented in a very matter-of-fact and low-key way.